This is Gary Wakefield, and you're listening to Queer Life Stories.
I'm Abby, I'm 50, just recently turned 50, and I identify, I suppose, as queer. I strongly identify as lesbian, but it's all over the spectrum, and queer seems to cover a lot of the different elements of that. So, yeah, I suppose queer. Okay, the first thing I should say right up front are two things. One is that I'm adopted. My birth parents were not able to have me at the time, largely due to societal pressure. It was 1970, and there was no support for single parents, and they decided not to marry, although my father offered to marry my mother. She didn't feel worthy because she was a Mormon. And my adopted parents are also Mormons. So that is my background. I didn't leave the church until I was around about 21. So I've got a strong background in Mormonism, or as they prefer to be known, as the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So I was adopted by the through the church agency, rather, and it was one of my younger brothers, and then we went from Melbourne to Perth to Adelaide to Singapore to Hong Kong, where my mother miraculously fell pregnant and one of my brothers was born, to Singapore, where she had the accident baby, back to Adelaide, where I stayed there for about 30 plus years, and my parents took off. They left when I was about 23, and everyone was saying to me, "Oh, when did you leave your family?" I said, "They left me."
What were your parents like?
They were very good, very supportive of anything I wanted to do, very encouraging of me undertaking education. They encouraged me to question. So even though there was this strong religious component in their lives, my dad always said, "Don't take what we say on face value. Question. Ask, is this right for you? Does this make sense?" And he encouraged me to do that of other religions as well. Does that make sense? And instilled a sense of respect for other religions and other people. You do what is best for you, and you respect other people, their right to live their lives as best they choose. Which is, upon reflection, stood me in good stead with my lifestyle, because, or as people call it, a lifestyle, you found it useful to respect people and how they choose to live their lives and how they identify. So by having instilled in me through my parents that respect for beliefs and other people's religions, it's kind of carried over into the queer and LGBTAIQ. I refer to that as the alphabet soup, because while I respect how people identify, it's a lot for other people to take in. I've been in the lifestyle for a long time, and it's difficult for me to figure out what all the acronym means and who's identified as what, and I expect people's identifying that way, but most people don't understand. They're locked into this binary of gay and straight that it's difficult for them to understand. Anyway, I digress. their support in that religious respect has carried over, and I have that same respect. If you want to live your life as you choose to live, as long as you're not hurting anyone, then what's the problem? Mormonism was hugely important through my childhood and teen years. Went to church every Sunday, 3 hour sessions every Sunday. There were child programs, there were teen programs, so there was things like basketball and netball and things like that that were for the teens. There were in my teens, while I was doing high school, they have something called seminary, which is you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and you study scriptures for an hour before you go to school. And I did that. I completed that program, and I also completed something called Institute, which is a similar program which is run for those older who are studying at university.
But do you feel like it helps shape your view of other people and how you interacted with them?
As I said, more to the point of my father being, I suppose, more progressive in that way, in supporting the questioning, and he is a very strong believer in allowing people the freedom to practice religion as they see fit. So in that regard, it was fantastic. Yes, very strict in a regular attendance at church, in regular prayers. Every meal you have a prayer. You have a prayer when you wake up, you have a prayer when you go to sleep. So it was very much imbued into your daily life. So even straight sexuality needed to be very heavily repressed and guided. No sex before marriage. Masturbation was incredibly frowned upon, even though that could have alleviated some of the pressure of wanting to have sexual relations with somebody else. There was the pressure to marry early. Partly, I suspect, because you can't have sex before you marry. There was a pressure to have children. So there's those things that weren't necessarily policy of the church, and not necessarily something that was advocated or in their scriptures or discussed through the church meetings, but it was something that was there that you don't have sex before marriage, you don't engage in sexual activities which could lead to anything that you don't be like my mother and have a child out of wedlock. My parents and two of my brothers are still very much involved in the church, and they have informed me that the church has softened its stance on gays, and I'm trying to find out what softening their stance means. From what I can gather, it means that they'll no longer ostracize you and kick you out of the house. Not that my parents ever did. And you can go to church and you can even hold callings, which is basically undertake lay positions within the church, as long as you're not practicing.
There's the kicker.
And I'm sorry, but I like practicing way too much. At one point, I considered myself a citizen of the world, because I'd heard in various places, you're a citizen of this world or a citizen of that world. We were Australian citizens, and I just didn't feel like I fit in anywhere, which actually is a relevant to this conversation. And so I considered myself a citizen of the world. I didn't actually feel I could put my roots in one place. Every couple of years we moved. So when we were in Adelaide for a couple of years, I went up to my dad and I said, "Is it time yet? Where are we going next?" I haven't found myself in Adelaide for 30 years. From the time I asked about where did I come from, I was given the normal birds and bees story, age appropriate as things went on. But I was also told you came to the family a different way. And I was told about adoption and that my birth parents couldn't care for me, and so they cared for me. They were always very respectful that my parents couldn't care for me. So I didn't feel like I had been abandoned, and I didn't feel like they didn't want me, so just gave me up. It was a case of, well, hey, we all agree this would be the best thing to happen, so this is what's happening, and you're a very much valued and wanted member of the family. And I had a good position in the family. I was the eldest and the only girl, so hey, who am I to complain? How I found my mother was 21 years later. I didn't want to hurt my family at all, and I didn't want to intrude on her family, because I'd heard enough stories of mothers who just didn't want to go there. That part of their lives had been sealed up, thrown away, don't want to know about it anymore. So I didn't want to interfere with anything like that. I didn't know how it would go, but I wanted the answers. What happened? Why? More importantly, what's my medical history? Because that came up every single time I'd go to the doctor and they'd say, "What's your medical history?" "I don't know. I'm adopted." So, what? So, I had decided that with my 21st birthday coming up, I wanted some of these answers. They had a group called Jigsaw that put people in touch with each other. That largely depended on the goodwill of both people. They didn't have things like the DNA tracing that they do now. But because I had been adopted through the church's adoption agency, the church still maintained records. And you could still contact the agency, and if both agreed, then go for your lives. When I contacted them, I found out that she had contacted them when I was 15. Well, that ticked the box for me. I wasn't going to do anything unless she was okay with it. Seeing as she'd tried to find me when I was 15, but had stayed away out of respect for me and my family, thought, well, that's it. So I asked the agency to pass my number, and we spoke for the very first time on my 21st birthday. So that was pretty good. And we did all the question, where were you, how did... One of the important things was answered for me was, did you think of me on my birthday? And it turns out that both of us had been thinking about each other on my birthday, which was a nice connection to make, especially when I was overseas. Knowing that I was overseas and I was thinking of her and she was here and was thinking of me, that was pretty good. Then she says, "Do you want to know your father?" I was completely gobsmacked. My father, I mean, it was treasure finding my mother, but you never hear of people finding their fathers and connecting with their fathers. "Yeah, sure. How did you find that out?" "Oh, well, he lives in Balmain in Sydney. I knew where he was." I said, she called him up and said, "I've met our daughter. Do you want to be in contact?" He did. So I'm in contact with both my mother and my father. So it's pretty good. You never hear of stories like that, or rarely hear of stories like that. So she hasn't had any other children, so I'm the golden child there. And my father has had two sons to his first marriage, and, well, I should say his only marriage, and he has had a daughter to his current partner, and they've been together for when 30 plus years. So I can finally say I have a sister. I haven't been in touch with one of my brothers for quite some years, but then he lives in Abu Dhabi. So one of them is, he's the connector. He keeps all of us in touch with everybody else and says, this is what so-and-so is doing, this is what is happening. And on special days, Father's Days, birthdays, Christmases, that sort of thing, always in contact with him. So, yeah, I'm very lucky, very, very blessed. Much like most people, there were inklings. Dreams, a little thing, oh, I wonder what it would be like to kiss that person. Oh, hang on, no, I can't think that way. Oh, I find myself looking at catalogues. Oh, that's a nice bra. Oh, that's a nice breast. Little things like that that kind of give you a hint, but no, I can't possibly be like that. It wasn't until I was in my early 20s, and then I was being the free person that I was. I'd moved out of home, I'd started working, I was at uni, so I was able to do what I wanted, and I was going to see my favourite band. Free Spirit, it was called. Margarita was the lead singer, who I later discovered was a lesbian, and I'd been in the audience with one of her, sorry, not one of, her lover. And there was this one time I attended, and she was up on stage and she was singing one of my favourite songs and she was making all the moves, and it suddenly hit me like a thunderbolt. I like this woman and I want to go to bed with her. Oh hell, I must be a lesbian. And I thought about that for a bit. I thought, you know what? Yeah, I think I am. And I got all excited with this thunderbolt of a revelation of mine that I wouldn't tell people. I'm a lesbian. I like women. And it didn't occur to me that that was probably not the best thing to do. That there are pockets of society that can bash people up for that, or can discriminate against that. So I just went off and told everybody. Mind you, to this day, I still tell everybody. I don't care what anybody thinks or whether there's going to be discrimination at restaurants or whatever. If you don't want to serve me, fine, I'll turn around and go out the door. So that's how I discovered my sexuality.
What about family? Did you tell your parents and siblings?
No, I didn't. Well, that just completely contradicts what I said about going ahead and telling everybody. My mum asked me. I'd been dating the woman who I would end up being in a very long-term relationship with. And my mum called me up and said that they'd been at the airport and had witnessed two women having a very passionate goodbye. And I said, oh, yeah, right. Yeah. And Mum said, oh, I think that's disgusting. I said, yeah, well, I suppose each to their own. Perhaps a very public display of affection like that wasn't necessarily appropriate with lots of family around, but each to their own. Then a few days later, Mum called me up and said, are you a lesbian? I said yes. I can't remember whether we talked too much about that, whether she asked whether I was seeing anyone or when it happened, as if this is something that can just happen, and what her feelings were about it. Obviously, she was disappointed, especially given the fact that I had been engaged to a Mormon male. about 3 or 4 years earlier, but that's what happens. So, yeah, they asked me. They didn't ostracise me, which I was surprised at, given that the church was very, very strict on this sort of thing. It was one of those topics that went into the "we don't talk about that" basket. Much like politics, which is still a "we don't talk about that" topic. Occasionally we can touch on it. Throughout the years, obviously, this woman was in my life for a very long time, and my parents met her. That's how they came to find out.
How old were you when you got to Adelaide?
15. I went to school there, I was 15. So it was in my late teens that I started to realise maybe there might be something there, but hey, repress it. If you have ever seen the Book of Mormon, the musical, there's one song there about tamping feelings down. It's a little Mormon trick. That is very, very true.
Start to get confused because of thoughts in your head. Don't feel those feelings. Hold them in instead. Turn it off like a light switch. Just go click. It's a cool little Mormon trick. We do it all the time when you're feeling certain feelings that just don't seem right. Treat those pesky feelings like a reading light and turn them off.
It's very, very true. Just switch it off. I wasn't too quiet. I wasn't too loud when I was in university. That was when I discovered my sexuality. I didn't join any gay pride areas or groups. I didn't feel the need to do any of that. To be honest, I'm not sure whether there were many at that time. You see a lot of gay LGBTIQ groups around the place now, but there were very few then and very hard to find. I worked in a printing factory at the time to support myself through university, and that was one of the places where I walked in the door and said, "Hello everyone, I'm a lesbian." Really not thinking the consequences through. Immediately, or not long thereafter, all of the women that I'd been working with said, "So, you thought about any of us?" And on reflection, I thought, well, probably that's a natural reaction. If I suddenly come out and say, "Hey, I like women," the women in the factory would be curious as to, well, has she been looking at one of us all this time? Does she prefer one over the other? Quite a natural thing. And I said, no, I haven't been thinking of any of you," which I hadn't. Until they asked a question. And then I'm looking at all of them going, "Do I like you? Do I like you? Well, no, I'm not really into you. You might be okay." And then there was one night where I was working, and one of them, I gotta say, was a stunner. A little bit taller than me, long red hair. And then I was hit with, I suppose, a feeling of jealousy or a feeling of inadequacy that people get when they're dating. But I had never considered that this could occur in two ways. I thought, I'm never going to get a woman like you, and I'm never going to be a woman like you. And it was such an odd feeling to feel inadequate in those two ways. So, surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, I did meet my partner there. But she was not one of the ones that I had considered, yeah, maybe. I'd pretty much shut any feelings of looking at anyone there because I didn't think it appropriate in the workplace, and I didn't want any more questions like, what do you think of so-and-so, or hey, hang on. But yeah, I did meet my partner there. I met her at the printing factory. She actually approached me. I hadn't considered her. In fact, I didn't even want to look at her as a potential partner because she was 17. And there is no way in the world I wanted to be accused of any accusations of being with somebody who was underage. So I hadn't even considered that. But she asked me out. And I said, okay, well, we can go out. Obviously, nothing's going to happen, but we can date and get to know each other a bit better. So I was 24. You can do the math. And we went out on a few dates. One that I remember, which actually ties back into one of your previous interviews, we went to the theatre to see a group called Vital Statistics perform. And when we got there, she admitted that she had never been to the theatre, didn't know what the theatre was, but she wanted to be with me, so she agreed to a date to go to the theatre. Which kind of impressed me, but also shocked me. I didn't know anyone who didn't know what the theatre was. In retrospect, at 17, yeah, maybe that wasn't something that she'd been interested in before. But it was through that I got to know Margie and her work in Vital Statistics and in the art scene in Adelaide. So that date lasted through till the next day. Nothing happened, believe me. No accusations of impropriety, nothing sexual happened until she turned 18. I definitely didn't want anything to happen. Believe me, when it did, it was good. So we kept going. We moved in together. We got a dog together, which was a very interesting experience. It was kind of like having a child, and believe me, if we had a child, that poor child would run us ragged. There was one time when she said, oh, look at the cute little puppy on the bed. I said, I don't want the dog on the bed. Oh, cute little puppy on the bed. Yeah, cute little puppy grew to be 50 kilos who still wanted to be on the bed. When we first got together, we were excited about being there, and there were different areas that you could go to. It was still not an environment where you could walk in anywhere. So there was a place called Beans Bar, which was a lesbian only bar, which was like being a kid in a candy store. You're looking all around going, oh my god, not only are there lots of women here, I know they're a lesbian and I can go up and talk to them. We walked in, and one woman was talking to my partner, and she was just having a conversation. They were ended up playing pool or something like that, and her partner came over and said, you keep Blondie away. I'm like, hey, don't worry, she's not trying to pick her up. That's my partner. Hey, back off. So there were definitely some jealousies and things like that that were happening in the community. We also had a gay library, gay and lesbian library, that was part of the ACON network, the AIDS Council. And they'd had a lot of books there relating to AIDS and the latest research, but they also had things like fiction. And it was fantastic to read because they had lead characters that were gay and lesbian. and I'm a big reader, so I'm sucking up this sort of information. There was Mars Bar. If anyone in Adelaide from that era knows Mars Bar, because it is the place to go if you're gay. I went there one night before I'd met my partner to go, oh wow, this is where my people are. And I couldn't believe it when a man tried to hit on me. Seriously, dude, do you know where you are? I do not want a man. I want a woman. I did take her to Mars Bar. We danced and we got our song from there because we danced. It was our first dance and song and kiss. And I wanted to show her the drag shows, so we stayed quite late. So there were little places like this that existed in Adelaide at the time. Even though they existed, we still wanted access to places where it wouldn't feel like we were in a goldfish bowl. I wasn't reticent about holding my partner's hand. So we'd go shopping and I'd hold her hand. But it felt like every person was looking at us and looking at us holding hands and giving us that look like, oh, you're one of those people. Stay away from me. I might catch your disease. That started happening less and less. And I began to think that was probably because they were accepting us as the local lesbians. Right, yep. They're there, we know who they are, they're harmless, don't worry about them. As time went on, I think it became more that society recognised more of us and were more accepting. Holding hands was no big deal. It's not shoving our lifestyle down your throat. It's, if you're gonna hold your husband's, your partner's hand, we can hold our partner's hand. What's the big deal? Later, in the last 3 years, someone said to me, why did you feel like a goldfish bowl? Why? It's no big deal. Everyone's whoever they are. I said, you're talking about what's happening now, not what was happening then. So even in that 23 years, there's been a huge shift in how that society views gays and lesbians and LGBTIQ. They're starting to recognise, oh, hang on, yeah, it's gay, they're straight, but we're the same people with the same needs and the same expression. I'm pro-marriage, like a lot of gay and lesbian people are. And the whole pro-marriage referendum and movement and all that sort of stuff, I was definitely with everybody. I was signing the petitions, doing the whole bit. But I couldn't wait. I didn't want somebody to say whether or not it was going to be legal. I wanted that commitment, that family, that display of affection, that being able to say to my partner and hear from my partner in front of our families and friends that this is a commitment that we are making to each other. So we did. We had what we called a commitment ceremony. And my God, the decisions you have to make to get married? I didn't know you had to make so many. Where are you going to have it? Who's going to be your celebrant? How many family and friends do you want? Where are you going to put the reception? How many people are you going to have at particular tables? Where do you want each person to be sat? What do you want to eat? Do you want to have an entree? Do you want to have a mains? Do you want to have desserts? Hey, you've got some people here who are vegetarians. Are you going to have a separate menu for them? Are you going to pay for the bar? Is it going to be a bring your own? What songs do you want to have played at your wedding? And believe me, there's a story with that too. So many things. There were some things, though, that we decided straight up. For me, yes, I wanted the traditional white, but I am nowhere near a woman in that regard. When I was a child, I was considered a tomboy, a badge I wear with pride, and I'm definitely not a femme. I wouldn't go all the way butch. I don't use tools that much. But I've always loved coat and tails. So we both ended up wearing white coat and tails that we hired from a specialty shop. And my favourite colour is red, so I wore a red vest. Her favourite colour is black, so she wore a black vest. There was no top hat, but we decided that what would happen would be we would each come in. We wouldn't have one or the other waiting at the end. We would each come in. She came in on her mother's arm, and I came in on my birth mother's arm, and we met at the top. I didn't invite my adopted family because I didn't want their negativity contaminating the wedding. Again, to my surprise, my mother showed up, and I didn't realise how much I had actually wanted her there. So when she knocked on my door, I just gave her the biggest hug. I had tears streaming down my face. And she sat in the front and she watched it. She didn't say anything negative. She just was there. And I suppose because she hadn't been invited, she left after the ceremony. But we had written our vows. Correction. I wrote the vows and she had agreed with them. And it was amazing how reading those in front of the other, exchanging rings in front of a room full of your friends and family, makes you feel married, even though it's not legal. It was just incredible. And then we had the reception. And everyone seemed to have a good time, dancing and all that sort of stuff. And I decided, look, I was getting a bit tired. I wanted to get onto the next bit of the wedding day shenanigans. And said, oh, how about we go now? She said, no, I'm having too much fun dancing. So I had to remind her what a wedding night was for. Oh, okay, right, let's go. And we'd wanted the song from The Graduation, I've Had the Best Time of My Life. So we'd asked for that to be played. It was a song that every high school was using at the time, you know, Thanks for Being Here. And I thought that would be a good song to leave, thanks to all the people that came to the wedding. As we were leaving, the DJ played Good Riddance. I could not believe it. I was leaving my own wedding to the song of Good Riddance. It was another song that was on the same album, and he hadn't realised. I was mortified. Good talking point with everyone, though. We had our photos taken at Eyre's House, which is a very well-known historical establishment in Adelaide. And one of the people that had helped us plan our wedding said, you're creating her story. Not history. Her story. Because we were the first, rather, female couple to have their commitment ceremonies photos taken at that place. And I felt, hey, this is pretty good. Her story. we're doing something to advance the cause of everybody. We're normalizing it. It's fantastic. So that was good. And we bought a house together. Went through several iterations of jobs. And unfortunately, during the last couple of years of the relationship, things just didn't quite gel. So we tried to make it work. We consulted a lot of marriage counsellors, tried to talk to each other. We each went to our individual psychologists and counsellors and that sort of thing. One of the things that had been a concern of mine was the lack of individuality and the ability to do separate things. I just wanted to be able to go for a drive or a walk or just to have some time on my own, that I could just call my own. And in the last couple of weeks, she went out on her own. And I thought, wow, she's getting it. This is fantastic. Maybe we've turned the corner. And I came home from work one night. It was a Saturday. And she'd been out. I'd had to do some overtime. And she was half in, half out of the house at the backyard. And she said, I don't want you in my life anymore. Thunderbolt. I remember the exact words. On the very day that lesbian marriage became legal. I'd had a ring picked out that I was going to offer. I wanted us to have a legal marriage 20 years after our commitment ceremony. I wanted to be able to celebrate that. And I'd given her 6 months. I said, let's see how we go. We ended up living in separate places, see how things go. And it didn't. So, yeah. Talking about marriage and the pro same-sex marriage movement, I was a part of all of that because obviously I wanted to get legally married. Throughout our relationship, I didn't feel comfortable in referring to her as my wife. Every now and then I would, because technically we'd had a commitment ceremony, we wore the wedding rings, we had eternity rings in every respect. We were married, and so every now and then I would refer to her as my wife, but I always felt that reluctance because technically it wasn't legal. So I would promote that sort of thing and be a part of it. And when the referendum was passed, yes. My God, that was amazing. I was walking the streets of Adelaide, you know, getting to and from work. And the feeling was incredible. There was such joy that it was palpable. And you could tell the people that had fought for it. You could tell, honestly, the people that were on the spectrum, gay, lesbian, they had such beaming faces all over. And if they saw somebody else with a smile like that, they'd go over and hug them. Didn't know them from a bar of soap, it didn't matter. In a way, we'd won. We got something that we had fought so long for. It was just an incredible feeling. It was amazing. I don't know whether other areas experienced that as well, but that's a day burned in the brain. I came over to Tassie because there was an opportunity for my work. I work in the emergency management sector, and it's hard to come by in terms of employment. They're like gold. It's a field in which people are very passionate, very experienced, very qualified. In fact, there's a position going in Adelaide that if I had stayed, I'd apply for. Not sure that I'd get it or not, but the person that has been in that role has been in that role for over 20 years. Yeah. So it's partly because he's wanted to stay there for all that time, partly because there isn't much room for advancement unless you go sideways and then maybe up. So the current State Emergency Service Chief in South Australia came from Tasmania. Yeah. So that's an interesting thing. So yeah, I came over to Tasmania because there was a work opportunity, and when you're unemployed and a work opportunity comes, particularly in your field, you take it. One of the things when I was talking about how we had Beansborough and Marsborough and there were little places that we had,
yeah.
I recall somebody, a gay man, saying that they had felt some loss, that because of all of this, the general acceptance, that there were some places that had closed down. Apparently there were more before Marsborough was there. And the old handkerchief system of, hey, this means I'm interested in this, this means I'm interested in that. They felt a loss of all of that. And I thought, why are you worried about a loss? We should be able to go anywhere we want. It shouldn't matter. Beansborough closed down. Marsborough closed down. The library closed down. The magazines that gave gay-specific news closed down. And so we have that loss of community. In one way, it has been replaced by things like Facebook, so that we have different ways of communicating with each other, but those physical hubs have gone. And even though we have had the yes referendum, that is starting to slide back. I don't think that we'll lose our right to marry in a hurry, but there's the religious discrimination bill that is before Parliament, and there are some places that are saying, I refuse to create a wedding cake for gay people. There are some areas, some pockets that you're starting to see people are having to be careful about where they walk and how they display affection. I remember one of my friends saying, well, now that you've got it, you don't need to worry about it. No, the rise of the right is happening, and in some ways I'm having to be more careful in some places than I was before. I think the time I came out, people were becoming aware of things like discrimination and of the need to, in some cases, be over-welcoming. So I didn't experience any feeling that I could not get to where I wanted to go because of my sexuality. I had considered that there might be some areas where that might occur. One of my early jobs, I was invited to a dinner and partners were welcome. So I went to my boss and I said, you know how you said partners are welcome? And she said, yeah. I said, well, my partner is the same sex. Oh yeah, that's fine. Don't worry, bring her along. Great! So in all my subsequent workplaces, I've just said, well, I'm a lesbian, I have a female partner. Basically, if you've got a problem with that, it's your problem, not mine. That really scares me, the rise of the right and that Religious Discrimination Act. I'm appalled that they even want to put that bill forward, because we've tried so hard for so long to get equality, and then partly because we've now got the right to marry if we so choose, they think that they need protections to decide who they can employ. That just seems completely wrong. If you choose to have a school that is geared towards your religion, go for it. If you only want to employ people that adhere to your religion, your beliefs, go for it. But don't expect government money. The minute you take government money, you are bound by government values. Just as religions expect adherence to follow to their values, you need to adhere to the government rules. That kind of riles me up. You have the right to practice religion as you see fit, as long as it's not hurting anyone. And this is hurting people. I was speaking to a friend of my parents who is still in the religion, and she was saying, you can be what you like as long as you don't shove your sexuality in front of us. What do you mean about shoving our sexuality? What, we kiss our partners goodbye when we get out of the car, when they drop us off at work? We hold hands when we're in public, when we go shopping? How is that shoving our sexuality down your throat? We want to buy a cake for our wedding. How is that us shoving our sexuality down your throat? You shove your sexuality down our throats all the time. We finally won some protections in relation to employment, in relation to being able to go into establishments, and a whole host of other things. Now you want to scale that back because you think that your rights are threatened? I'm sorry, but religion has quashed us for millennia. And the minute you think your rights are being threatened in some way, you need protection? Nah, that doesn't wash with me. So anyone who feels as strongly as you and I do on this issue, write to your MPs, for goodness sake. Sign any petitions that come along. We can't let this happen. Or if it does happen, we have to fight to the teeth. Again, if I can just add one thing, she will be very upset if I don't mention this. I have been very, very fortunate, and I have found myself a lovely partner who is just amazing and has understood my background and has said, supported me in what I've done, even though I've come 1,208 kilometres away from her, has said, you need to do this, you go ahead. And has offered me that support and that shoulder and that love that I've needed.
Any final message for anyone listening?
Talk to people. Talk to someone you trust. Find those groups, whether it be on Facebook or on university campuses or somewhere else, and talk to them. There are plenty of Pride days, Pride picnics, groups that are there that you may identify with more than the other. Just go. Even if you just cower in the corner for a little bit, as you do that more and more, as you talk to people more and more, which is, I know, very, very difficult to do, but you'll start to feel more comfortable. You'll start to meet people that will welcome you, that will listen to you, and that will help you feel a little bit more comfortable until that you can become established and you can feel comfortable in your own skin and be who you need to be. Don't be afraid to be who you are.
If you are struggling with your mental health, please contact Lifeline on 13 1114 or Beyond Blue on 1300 22 4636. Both services are available 24/7. If you would like to share your story, talk about your experiences, or would just like to get in touch, you can email me at queerlifestories@outlook.com or find us on Facebook or Instagram. Just search for Queer Life Stories. If you're listening in Northwest Tasmania and would like to be part of an LGBT plus community social and support group, search Facebook for Northwest Pride. In Tasmania, if you want support for sexuality, gender or intersex status, you can contact Working It Out on 03-6231-1200. Q Life provide anonymous and free LGBTI peer support and referrals for people across Australia wanting to talk about sexuality, gender identity, relationships and more. They're available 3 p.m. to midnight every day on 1800 184 527 or web chat with them at qlife.com.au. You can hear future episodes of Queer Life Stories at Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. Please follow, rate and review. It does really help. We will be back soon. Take care of yourself and each other.